to Kibbutz and Bits, where we argue information security and draw lessons from the weekly Torah portion.
A Torah portion is the biblical reading in the Jewish scriptures for a given week. We are clear, we're not Torah experts.
No, some might say we're barely cybersecurity experts.
Yeah, some might say, but we do have opinions and we'll share them with you.
This weekly podcast, you are listening in 2020 or 5780, depending on your point of view. And this is episode 13, lucky number 13 for the week of January 12th. I'm Wolf. By day, I'm an advisory CISO.
I'm Dave. I work in cybersecurity professionally, but you may know of my work with Hack for Kids.
Hey, what's up this week? What's going on in the Torah?
So this week is Parashat Shemot. It's Exodus 1:1 through 2:25 for the triennial year 1. I have to say, I love this book. This is the book where I grew up hearing these stories, watching them on TV. You know, these are like kind of like childhood memories that I just, you know, like a safety blanket or a security blanket, even better. I just love to get wrapped up in the security blanket. So what we have going on here is the introduction of Moses and Pharaoh and a lot of the different activity in Egypt, specifically from the settlement of Joseph and his family and the prosperity that the Hebrews have had in Egypt. Kind of giving you the short version, within this parashat, there's different stories that happened where there's some kind of perceived threat or legitimate threat, and then there's some kind of reaction resulting in some other new problem. So, for example, Pharaoh sees that there's a population swell of the Hebrews. The perception is if there's ever a war with their enemies of Egypt, then the Hebrews might rise up against the Egyptians and, you know, kind of having the home field advantage and the population, it could not go very well for Egypt. So rather than trying to come up a way, you know, maybe have a written agreement that we're allies, Pharaoh says, no, we're going to become taskmasters and we're going to make these people unhappy. We're going to pretty much enslave them. And we're also going to kill their firstborn children or son, I should say. Therefore, you know, as people know the story, what is the response to that? The response is a woman creates a basket, baby Moses into it, and then sends him down the Nile, where he's then rescued by an Egyptian woman. This continues on and on throughout this parsha. So I just wanted to kind of maybe send it back to you and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, and I like the way you frame that, right? Because there's several levels of controls that keep getting put into place. First, it's, well, and this happened before the section, but first it's, well, we own the Hebrews' land, right? After the famine, a lot of the land went to the Pharaoh. Okay, so now we own the land. Now it's, well, we also want to put in taskmasters over them. So that's like control number two. And that's like, well, they're still spreading. So we're going to tell the midwives to kill the firstborn. That's control number three. And the midwives aren't enacting that, obviously, who would. And then it's, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to throw all the boys in the Nile River. That's control number four. And it is an interesting parallel with a lot of security, because you see a problem, you put in place a control. And then that control creates a new problem, so you got to put in place another control, right? And then the user's trying to work around it a different way. So now you got to, like, tighten up and prevent outbound traffic. It's the sort of cat and mouse that we're all very familiar with, or anyone who's had to, play the role of the taskmaster or the security officer.
My entire career, I've been told controls are good. And that's why we have a pet name for them, compensating controls.
Oh, come on, Dave. You don't need to compensate for anything. Let it go. Let it go.
Wait, is that a Rosen reference?
Well, to thaw it out a little bit, are controls good? Sure, sure. Do you want everyone to run rampant and do whatever you want? No. Do you need good controls to protect the privacy integrity of data? Yes. But we know intrinsically, I think, that the tighter the yoke is on us, the more we want to do something else, right? I mean, the less I can do on my computer, the more I'm just going to go use a different computer.
All valid points. But now, okay, we need to have these security controls. And it's not so much to just tighten the yoke. It's really around making sure that data is not getting exposed. Okay, you're putting a yoke on the data. I know where you're going to go with that. So you have these security controls preventing users, and sometimes from themselves, and I think some people listening will agree, but from doing things like installing applications on their computers. Now, if they're going to install a productivity app, that's fine. But a lot of the times they're installing things that could also be malware, or they might get a phishing attack. We've talked about these before, where there could be a document or something embedded inside of an attachment or link, where then it's now going to be able to give that threat, that malware, the ability to install itself, because they're an admin. It just needs to install as the user. So, you know, giving them a lot of this freedom is just creating more of these problems. So I'm going to continue to be the advocate for, we need to have tighter security controls, A, to protect the users from themselves, because a lot of them we know are not really super trained in IT. And even if they are, then they're trying to do things that we really don't want them to do on a corporate asset. Next, we also want to have these controls because when they're off network, we know it's the Wild Wild West. We don't know where the device is going to go. A majority of the users are doing something either on a laptop, which hopefully the endpoint antivirus and the other protection software that's on there is up to date. Maybe even have some kind of port control so that they don't just plug any random USB in there, and hopefully it's encrypted. We also know that they have mobile devices. They could have a tablet. They might even have, more than likely, they have a phone. I mean, it's kind of hard to find somebody nowadays who's over the age of 10 without a smartphone. And what are they doing on there? If it's a corporate or an enterprise asset, it should have an MDM on it. It should have a way to prevent any malicious attacks. We know pretty much regardless of the smartphone operating system that there are attacks, there are vulnerabilities, right? We kind of went into that too, also with ubiquity of a platform last week. So kind of all these different things that we've talked about, I'm going to stand behind a lot of that. I'm sorry I kind of put you there right on the edge, but I'm going to still go for the tighter control, the better.
Well, so here's the thing, stepping away from the machine for just a minute, and this is going to make sense right away, so follow me through. In the study of creativity, there's this thing known as the law of constraints. And what the law of constraints says is that measurably, through lots of evidence, through lots of studies, the more constraints that are put on a person trying to solve a problem creatively, the more creative the end solution gets. So if you got plenty of money, you just go out and buy something. If you don't have much money, you make something, right? The more controls that we put around someone, the more constraints we put around someone, the more creative they become. And the problem is that creative users are dangerous users. I mean, you think about some of the controls you mentioned. Let's take data exfiltration, for example, right? So we say, thou shalt use your corporate devices, thou shalt only send data certain ways. Every organization I've ever been to that has those types of controls in, there becomes a whisper network, a shadow IT network of people going, oh, by the way, they didn't lock down if you send it to your personal email. Or, oh, by the way, they forgot that there's this site over here. Or, oh, by the way, here's this way that you can get it from your encrypted USB to a non-encrypted. And so creative people are dangerous people. And creative people, or people in general today, have lots of options. There's a survey I was reading out when I was looking at back at the end of the year, that shows that 1 in 5 employees in the United States have 6 devices that they get their work done on. And those are not corporate devices. Those are all sorts of different things. And why are they doing that? Because the constraints that we give them, the technology we give them, is holding them back. So they work around us.
There is no compromise. You really made a good argument on the compromise, the creative user. Yeah, and I see your point on the creative user. My thing is, if you're going to give them an enterprise or corporate asset, and you know they might have 6, and I know I have more than that. If you count all the stuff, all my equipment that I use, and on my desk and in my basement and wherever else might be, like drawers and my dresser, what I'm getting at is there are security compensating controls. So in order to access corporate email, which we know is one of the biggest vectors, if not the biggest vector for attacks, is you could use something like certificate-based authentication. The certificate is going to live on that corporate endpoint. It's going to be something that's issued by IT or IS, and the way you get it on there is through the management tool. So if somebody is going to say, I'm going to fire up a browser and log into my email web client, and it's my home computer, well, without that certificate, without using CBA, it's not going to happen. There's other things too, like integration with identity providers and having something like SAML version 2.0 on the back end in order to hand off verification of the identity instead of traditional basic authentication. Well, I think you make a really strong case. I'm going to hold my ground that there are other constraints, or there's other ways to implement constraints. I think we're just getting more and more sophisticated out there, but I do agree that the users are getting more and more creative.
And I think the trick is to make following the security controls easy, right? So if your day job is to do these six tasks, and ordinarily it takes a half hour to complete this, and it's just piecework again and again and again, whatever these six tasks are. Think you're in accounting, or think you're in HR or something, right? Repetitive work. And suddenly security says, oh, by the way, you need to now do this other task, that other thing, these other three things, and the copy and paste you used to use, we can no longer allow that because we read on Krebs that someone copied and pasted data wrong. And suddenly your six tasks go from a half hour to 45 minutes to 1 hour because of all the problems of security. I mean, you're effectively asking someone to do something very much like Pharaoh asked the midwives, right? We know, midwife, your mission is to bring forth new life. Oh, by the way, we're imposing a control on you where you now need to, kill the firstborn son. It's antithetical to how the modern workforce works. And that's why I believe we've seen such a spike in shadow IT and in consumerization. They have other options.
It sounds like you're telling me that the midwives were performing shadow IT because they were not able to perform their duty of slaying the firstborn.
Yeah, I'd say the midwives were doing shadow IT. And then Moses's mother, who puts him in a basket, is doing data exfiltration, working around the limits of where data goes. I'll stand by those two metaphors.
I'm going to say that the Nile was cloud services.
Well, cloud services is a perfect example, right? I don't know if I've said this on this podcast, but I know I've told you the story, Dave, about the CIO friend of mine, or CISO friend of mine, who found out that they were in the cloud because one of his C-level peers was bragging about how much studying his team does, how smart they were, how dedicated they were to learning. And his metric was, oh yeah, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on Amazon. The CISO's like, what? That can't all be books. Oh yeah, honestly, it's all books. And when he investigated what had actually happened was, they used the fact that they could buy stuff from Amazon to sign up for AWS to build their own Skunkworks cloud services, and had already shifted over a whole bunch of technology completely under the noses of everyone. Why? Because those took too long to provision stuff in traditional data centers. They floated the data out down the Nile.
I love that term, Skunk Works. I guess you've just continued to support or further supported your argument that if you're going to have some kind of constraint, right? The constraint was you could use this Amazon account and buy some books. We want you to self-study. We want you to be the best and the brightest. We want you to be on that bleeding edge. But they got creative and they started using it to spin up boxes for whatever their reasons are. I think that's a good example, a bit of an egregious sample because it's six-figure number for expenditures. But and to me, that also is another reason why we can't compromise on the security controls. If there were better security controls around what they were doing with that account, then that would have prevented that wastefulness. And I wonder how many years that went on. Did it go on for multiple years? Was this for multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars?
I don't have the exact time periods, but it was definitely several months because they were able to stand up everything.
Gotcha. Oh, even over several months, it was a hundred thousands of dollars. Wow, that's crazy. Now, kind of touching back on some of these different kind of constraints. Again, the users, they're doing their own thing. They're in this example that you just gave, they're standing up servers. There may or may not have been any kind of security controls on those servers. No constraints. There could be vulnerabilities. Are they a part of the patch management cycle? Was there any endpoint protection? Were the firewalls open? Were they using, I know in AWS you've got to use a certificate, so at least they probably had certificate-based authentication with SSH to get on there, so that's good. But if you open up a web server using basic auth to the file system, you kind of got around it. So there's all these different things. that could have been going on. And again, I'm making a lot of assumptions, trying to prove my point that if there are proper constraints, you know, nobody could ever create an AWS instance unless it's gone through this proper authorization channel. And we need to know from a management standpoint, IT resource management, asset management standpoint, you know, how to get on the box. We need a service account. We need, you know, access to the certificate to get on there, so on and so forth. And none of that was done. And I think that's supporting my argument for there is no compromise and we need to have tighter security controls.
Well, I mean, so let's be clear. I'm not suggesting that any of those controls you mentioned shouldn't have been in place. But had the security controls been appropriate, right? You said earlier there's no compromise. I'm arguing there has to be a compromise between the people whose lives are affected, whose work is affected by the controls, and those of us who need to protect our environments. And when there is a compromise, when there's a certain degree of empathy for the other person, when there's amount of listening and figuring out how they're working and why they're working, when that happens, I believe that a compromise can be struck where controls can be in place, but they're in place where they affect the bad guys, not the people trying to get their job done. I think the ideal control is invisible as possible to the end user. You know, back to that whole six-step process, it doesn't affect that six-step process, or if it does, it's very nominal, whereas it's very visible and has high stopping power for the criminals.
I think you just won this one with your last sentence, high stopping power for the criminals. So I'm just going to have to yield then, because I think we could go back and forth on this for quite some time. The important thing here is really kind of maybe having a balance. I'm going to see if I can get you to meet me halfway, where we need to have these tight security controls, where I'm going to meet you halfway and say, yeah, we need to do something also so that the users do feel they can be productive, they can do what they need to do to get their job done without increasing the amount of time it takes them, because security is now in the way rather than just something that's like, just a part of the process, right? Like logging into a web server to check your email, that's a part of the process. But if security is going to make it encumbering, then they're not going to want to do it. And, or like you said before, if they want to do stuff on the work computer, they can't, and they just grab another computer. So in order to avoid them from grabbing the other computer, there, I guess there needs to be some compromise. I'm going to yield a little bit to you, but I think you won this one.
Huzzah! You guys heard it here first. I won one. I'll give an example, I think, of where what you're saying and what I'm saying comes together. And as you guys know, I spent a lot of time looking at zero trust. So you mentioned logging into a web app, right? Or logging into a web server. So if you think about that moment in authentication, if at the moment of authentication, we could check a few things, right? Is the user coming from a healthy device? Are they coming from a trusted location? Have we seen them before? Is there no suspicious behavior being performed? All those things. If we can check those things quickly and seamlessly and let a person log in with no burden, no barrier, 99.9% of the time. But the 0.1% of the time that they've got some malware in their box, the 0.1% of the time where they've got a new box that we've never recognized or seen, the 0.1% of the time where we've seen some suspicious behavior. Maybe it's one of those, you know, so-called Superman attacks where they logged into New York 5 minutes ago and they logged in from San Francisco 5 minutes later. If at that point of authenticating to that web server, we can stop and enforce a boundary, if we can stop and enforce the security control that says, whoa, stop, something's not right here. We need to reassert trust. We need to get things back on the rails. That's an example, I think, of something that, you know, wouldn't get in the midwives' way, wouldn't get in the people's way, because 99.9% of the time, it's invisible. It's the small percentage of the time where it's the criminal that we absolutely need to be able to throw up a wall and stop immediately.
I like how you refer to baby Moses in the basket going down the Nile. I guess that's kind of putting baby Moses in his own swim lane during his workflow.
Exactly. Keep the baby in the right basket and make sure it's encrypted.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess, folks, you heard it. Zero trust sounds like a good way to go when it comes to securing against different types of threats that then potentially create like another security problem while applying different kinds of compensating controls, the idea of being more and more constraining may not be the best approach these days. And something like a concept of zero trust could be the way to go for your environment. And you know, Wolf, do you want to wrap us up?
Yeah, sure. And I think the takeaway here is every time you crack down too hard, there is pushback. Whenever we make a move for the users, we have to figure out what are they going to do next. Just like in previous episodes, we talked about whenever we put in place a control for the criminals, we have to figure out where they're going to go. And I think this has been a great conversation. And thank you all for listening. This has been Kibitz and Bits with Dave and Wolf. So please remember to listen to the sponsor message afterwards. And hey, leave us a voice message if you got any comments about striking the balance that we talked about here. Or if you want to side with either Dave or I against the other point, leave us a voice message and it may be included in a future episode.